The content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors. Great companies like Sun Warrior, the pioneers of plant-based protein. From the sun to the plant to you, go to sunwarrior.com to learn more about all the products and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. Enviromedica, makers of Terraflora, a novel broad-spectrum symbiotic combining spore-form probiotics and advanced food-based ancient prebiotics. Find Terraflora and the full line of products at enviromedica.com. Castor and Pollux, the new standard in pet food, the only complete line of USDA organically certified pet food. Crazy Water, infused by Mother Nature, not some random factory. Paleo Magazine, now all digital. Go to paleomagazine.com to subscribe. The Wellbeing Journal, Veg World Magazine, the International Society of Sports Nutrition, and Thorne Research. Visit our dispensary at oneliferadio.com for 20% off and free shipping. You can find more information on all of our sponsors, including links to listener discounts, on the oneliferadio.com sponsor page. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio.
Want to go higher, baby? You're in the right place. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia, as well as KMET in sunny Southern California on ABC News Talk. And so good to be here today. Ronaldo, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Bernadette. How are you doing?
I'm good. I had a little bit of a stressful morning, but I'm back. You know, all these animals and the rain have made it a little crazy the last couple of days, but I'm ready to go. I'm so excited about today's show. Later on in the show, we have Dewan Bennett coming up. He's going to be talking about how to effectively deal with anger. And I think so many people are dealing with anger right now. So I'm happy to address that. And no one better to address it with than Dewan Bennett. He's amazing, everyone. And we have a special guest on today. She's on the line. Her name is Dr. Alexis Temkin. She is a toxicologist with a PhD in marine biomedicine and environmental sciences from the Medical University of South Carolina, and she also has a BA in biological sciences from Connecticut College. Dr. Temkin supports the Environmental Working Group's consumer databases, policy, and research in the areas of personal care and cleaning products, pesticides, and tap water. Dr. Temkin began her research career at Columbia University Medical Center, working as a lab technician studying the molecular mechanisms responsible for environmental influence on gene regulation. As well as a doctoral student, she studied how exposure to environmental chemicals during development can influence adult obesity and metabolic syndrome. Her areas of expertise include chemicals in consumer products, glyphosate, pesticides, PFAS, and tap water. Their website is ewg.org. That's the environmentalworkinggroup.org. Such an honor to have you with us today, Dr. Temkin. Welcome to One Life Radio.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on today.
Well, it's our pleasure, truly our pleasure. And this is a subject that I have been passionate about for many, many years. And so I'm so glad to have you on the show. And let's talk about this. So glyphosate, let's just talk about this first. What is the overall mission of the Environmental Working Group, or the EWG?
Yeah, so EWG is a research and policy-based organization. Our main office is in Washington, D.C., and then we also have offices in San Francisco and in Minneapolis. And so really our mission is to empower people to live healthier lives in a healthier environment. And what that means is that we work on environmental health, and we focus on chemical exposures that people might encounter in their daily lives. So that might come through their food in the terms of pesticides or food additives. It could be in their tap water. It could be in consumer products like cosmetics and cleaning products. And so we take this sort of information about the health effects of those chemical exposures and translate it into something that people can actually use on their day-to-day life, whether it's a consumer guide or just actually understanding what sort of is going on in the academic literature, which can be really hard for people to kind of digest if you are not have a background in science.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I would imagine you could get lost pretty easily. And this is a very complex subject. It really is for a lot of different reasons. And so, you know, today we're talking about the dangers of glyphosate. And so will you tell our listeners what glyphosate is for those that don't know?
Yeah, certainly. So glyphosate is a pesticide, and it is specifically an herbicide. So what that means is that when it's used, it will typically kill plants. You can have different types of pesticides like insecticides that are target, you know, bugs and insects, fungicides that look at fungus, or herbicides like glyphosate, which will kill plants. And so for that reason, its primary use in agriculture is for weed control. So you might hear it referred to as a weed killer or something
right.
like that. So, and that's its main use. It's used as the active ingredient in Roundup, which is used for weed control. And then it's primarily used on genetically modified crops like soybeans, which have been modified so that they can withstand the use of glyphosate, so that you can spray it on these crops. It'll take care of the weeds, but it won't actually kill those crops.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, there's this other use of glyphosate, which is this area that EWG has really focused on, where it can be used pre-harvest, which means it's used very late in the growing season on certain crops, and it's actually used as a desiccant. So what it does is it dries down these crops, and it's actually used to kill them and make the harvest a bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
The reason we're concerned about that is because it can actually lead to high levels of glyphosate found in those crops. And those are crops like wheat or oats or chickpeas, which is some of the crops that EWG has focused on in terms of detecting glyphosate in foods.
Yeah, no, I saw it on your website. 5 lesser known foods high in pesticides. The answer may surprise you. I mean, I was surprised by some of this. Number one on the list is hot and sweet bell peppers.
Yeah, so that's actually a place where we've looked at the United States Department of Agriculture pesticide data, and they monitor these types of crops for different pesticides every year, and they have certain levels of pretty concerning pesticides that impact neurodevelopment in children. So these are types of organophosphates. And EWG comes out with this Dirty Dozen list every year, which is the list of top fruits and vegetables with pesticides, and hot sweet peppers are number 13 on that list. So they don't necessarily make the cut, but they still have some concerning levels of pesticides. So we've highlighted it there.
Yeah. And you guys do the Dirty Dozen and I believe the Clean 15, right?
Correct.
For 15 top fruits and vegetables that are not as high a level of risk, right?
Exactly. The good news.
Yeah, the good news. Well, it's important because, you know, a lot of people do not, especially right now, have the money in their grocery budget to buy 100% organic. So this list that the EWG is putting together is very helpful to navigate on a budget for sure. And who wants to waste money where they don't have to? And on this list is oats, which you already mentioned, beans and legumes, which of course would cover hummus, because I was shocked a couple of weeks ago. I believe it was Zen Honeycutt from Moms Across America that, you know, alerted us that hummus now is one of the highest levels. And I saw it on your website as well, has the highest level of glyphosate in, you know, common food products that so many of us eat, especially with the vegan movement. Now, so many people eat more garbanzo beans, if you will, or hummus than they ever have.
Yeah, and it's certainly important. Something we emphasize all the time when we do our work on pesticides is that incorporating fruits and vegetables and chickpeas and hummus, right, they're also a great source of fiber and other dietary nutrients. They're very important parts of your diet, and they certainly should not be avoided because of the risk of pesticides. However, it's very important to understand that some of these healthy foods may have levels of glyphosate or other pesticides found in them that we think could be targeted through policy and should be reduced because they are important foods in the diet.
Well,
so
absolutely.
So chickpeas, for example, is one of these crops where glyphosate can be used as a pre-harvest desiccant. And when that happens, you see high levels of glyphosate in raw chickpeas that then, you know, people can use to make their own hummus, or in the finished products that are already available in the market, you know, like store-bought hummus.
Well, yeah, it alerted me for sure. My favorite hummus that I buy at Whole Foods is not organic, so I quit buying it. And so you do have to be aware. These are things that so many people don't know, and I'm so glad that we're talking about it today. So let's talk about this. So how dangerous is glyphosate to our health?
Yeah, so the health effects of glyphosate are really a topic that's currently under a lot of scientific investigation, and you will definitely find differing scientific opinions. I think one of the really important resources here for understanding the health effects of glyphosate, though, is the International Agency for Research on Cancer. So they are a group that is part of the World Health Organization, and they are involved in assessing the carcinogenic risk for a variety of different chemicals and exposure scenarios. But in 2015, they actually classified glyphosate as probably carcinogenic to humans. And that was really based on these findings in animal studies, but there's also evidence from occupational workers that exposure to glyphosate can increase their risk of cancer, particularly non-Hodgkin lymphoma. So In EWG's work, we've really focused on this evidence for carcinogenic effects. And one of the reasons we're really concerned about that is because children can be particularly sensitive or vulnerable to the effects of carcinogens, as well as other health effects. So there's been some interesting work on glyphosate looking at the female reproductive system, and that may also become a target of glyphosate that's sort of under investigation right now.
Wow, you've got your work cut out for you, don't you?
Yeah, you know, we always are looking at the literature and kind of understanding the health effects, and especially because what we've seen is with the Environmental Protection Agency in terms of their analysis of glyphosate, they really haven't considered the carcinogenic effects as a risk to human health. And so when they set their sort of limits of allowable amounts of glyphosate, we think they're far too high to actually be protective of some of these health effects that we are seeing.
Well, not only that, you know, when you were talking about, and we've talked about this before many times on the air. I mean, people spray it everywhere. They spray it on their lawns. You know, they want their lawns to look nice. We spray it in our public parks. You know, our animals are exposed to it. Our children are exposed to it. I don't think we'll know for many, many years, really, all the serious side effects that we are going to have to deal with because of this carcinogenic effect that it's going to have on all living things, not just humans, but animals as well. But, you know, you recently, as I said, I talked about this a second ago, but you recently tested different hummus brands for glyphosate. Can you tell us about your findings and what other types of foods have been found to contain glyphosate?
Sure. So we worked on, like I said, hummus and chickpeas primarily because of this use of glyphosate pre-harvest. So as desiccation where, you know, it's used to actually harvest the crop as opposed to remediating weeds. And what we found in terms of our chickpea products was that over 90% of those chickpea and hummus products had detectable levels of glyphosate. And some of those levels were quite high and sort of above what we would consider safe for children's health. But another really interesting finding sort of that we observed was that there were actually several samples that had non-detectable levels or pretty low levels of glyphosate. So that's actually sort of some good news and kind of encouraging in the sense that there are chickpea sources and chickpea supplies available that aren't using glyphosate in this way. So one of our major asks and sort of outcomes of a lot of these reports is often that we encourage companies to sort of dig into their supply chain and their sourcing and, you know, request that they actually have a source and a supply that doesn't use glyphosate in this pre-harvest use.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned wheat earlier. Does that include rice? Rice and wheat? I'm looking on the EWG. There's some interesting stuff here about a recent study in France.
Yeah, so I would actually think more about oats. So oats, in terms of glyphosate, that's where EWG has also done a lot of our testing. That was sort of the report that preceded our hummus work. So oats are known to have glyphosate used as this pre-harvest desiccant. And we tested a lot of oat products, whether it was oatmeal, oat-based cereals, oat-based snack products, and found that there were detectable levels of glyphosate in most of those products. And again, some were at really high levels. Wheat also has glyphosate applied to it pre-harvest. We tested some pasta samples. In general, the concentrations were a bit lower, And then rice, you won't have glyphosate used on it, but you can have some other pesticides.
Mm-hmm. I'm remembering a story from the New York Times from several years ago about an undercover investigation about a Chinese family that basically had lost two of their children. They knew that their rice was poisonous, basically, and they were forced to continue to grow it and sell it. I just thought of it just now, but you hear stories like that and you wonder, oh my gosh, you know, we have to be so careful about what we consume and where it comes from. And that's why, you know, organizations like the Environmental Working Group is so important, the work that you do. And I can't thank you enough. We're going to go to break. More coming up, continuing on with Dr. Alexis Temkin. She is a PhD and she works with the Environmental Working Group. We're going to continue talking about the dangers of glyphosate. Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas, as well as KMET in sunny Southern California on ABC News Talk. We are continuing on with Dr. Alexis Temkin. She is a toxicologist with a PhD in marine biomedicine and environmental sciences from the Medical University of South Carolina. She also has a BA in biological sciences from Connecticut College, and Dr. Temkin supports the EWG's consumer databases, policy, and research in the areas of personal care and cleaning products, pesticides, and tap water. And today we're talking with her about the dangers of glyphosate. So let's start with this. So is glyphosate also being found in our drinking water now too, Dr. Temkin?
Yeah, that's a good question. So regarding drinking water, glyphosate is a regulated contaminant under the Safe Water Drinking Act. So that means that monitoring for glyphosate is actually required. And so fortunately, what we see when we look at EWG has a tap water database where we've actually pulled drinking water samples from water utilities across the nation and put them into a tap water database. And so we fortunately don't see that there's actually a lot of contamination of glyphosate in drinking water. But it's super important to continue to monitor these surface and groundwater sources that are used for drinking water, especially in agricultural areas. So I think there was a report that came out from the United States Geological Service that looked at Midwestern streams and rivers and actually found glyphosate detected pretty frequently in those surface water areas. And so that's often what we use in terms of a source water for our drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be an important place, especially as agricultural use continues to either increase or change in different places, that we monitor to make sure that our water is still, we're serving drinking water that is glyphosate free.
Well, the work that you do is so important. I'll say that again. It just is. And in fact, I encourage everyone out there to go to EWG.org and make a small donation like I did this morning. Only $10. Every little bit helps. The work that they do is so critical for our well-being and the planet's well-being. So I encourage you to go to EWG.org. Let me ask you this. Can you talk a little bit about the EWG's health benchmark for glyphosate and what it is and how did you come up with it?
Yeah, so what you'll see in a lot of our work on glyphosate, and we thought it was really important for us to come up with a benchmark that what we would consider is an allowable limit or more of a safe limit for glyphosate exposure, because really the EPA has ignored carcinogenic effects associated with glyphosate and other risks to children health. So the levels that the EPA allows are often, we believe, too high to be protective for children's health and other certain health risks. So the state of California actually has come up with a no significant risk level for glyphosate, which is based on its carcinogenic effects. And so using that value, which was based on a 1 in 100,000 cancer risk, we developed a more protective level. So we use a 1 in a million cancer risk and then add a safety factor for children's health. And this is really common practice and actually recommended by several guidance documents by government agencies in order to account for children's sensitivity to carcinogens. Mm-hmm. So we recommend no more than 10 micrograms of glyphosate per day to prevent against chronic effects. So we're talking about long-term exposure over long periods of time. And so we use that 10 micrograms a day to come up with our drinking water benchmark, which is 5 parts per billion, as well as our oats and hummus benchmark, which is 160 parts per billion. So it helps give a little bit of context to some of the levels that we might be finding in either drinking water or the foods that we're testing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I have so many thoughts going through my head right now. A lot of them aren't so good, but it's kind of scary because you think, okay, so where does all this go? You as a scientist, does it dissipate up into the universe? I mean, it's got to go somewhere, you know, and when do we reach a level where we say, no, we can't tolerate it anymore? And I feel like we're already there, and yet nothing is being done by the EPA, it sounds like, or they're not taking it as seriously as they should. But what has been the FDA's response to the dangers of glyphosate?
Yeah, so FDA is partially responsible a lot for food testing and food monitoring. And so one of the major issues that I personally think is surrounding sort of glyphosate and glyphosate research is that there just really isn't enough data, and part of that falls on FDA. So FDA is responsible for a lot of testing of certain mm-hmm. foods to monitor for glyphosate. And in my opinion, they really have not done an adequate job of monitoring those foods. So they've tested, you know, thousands of samples, but they often pick foods where you wouldn't necessarily expect to find glyphosate. So they mm-hmm. looked in milk or eggs, for instance. But where we're looking for glyphosate, right, these types of crops where it's used as a pre-harvest desiccant or pre-harvest where you would expect to find higher levels in foods like oats and chickpeas, they have not, you know, looked at those foods on really a more nationwide scale. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've looked at a subset of samples, but it's really a government agency's sort of, I think, responsibility to do a much more larger sampling size.
Absolutely. And Monsanto is a huge company. It's a 111-year-old publicly multinational corporation, publicly traded on the NYSE under MON. They're very powerful. Everyone knows it. It's kind of disturbing, actually, that our government isn't more proactive and really protecting us. But what can we do personally to stop this chemical from being used?
Yeah, so EWG has sent in a petition to the EPA requesting that they lower this allowable limit of glyphosate on oats. And it's pretty interesting because originally, you know, I think in the 90s, there was a lower allowable limit in terms of how much glyphosate you could find on oats. And that level has increased over the years as we've seen petitions from companies using glyphosate in this pre-harvest application. So we've targeted this really small area of glyphosate use primarily because it is a small percentage of the use, but it can lead to high dietary exposures. So we have this EWG petition that we've sent in. And then I would also really encourage consumers to reach out to companies of their favorite foods, something that we've either reported in maybe our oats report or our hummus report, and actually urge and really request companies to take a look at their sourcing and source those types of crops that are not used, that do not have glyphosate used on them in a pre-harvest way.
Mm. Anything else you want our listeners to know, Dr. Temkin?
I would just say to keep tuning into EWG. We're going to continue to really work on this topic. We think it's really important, and we'd love to see some market change. So there is some good news here. You know, we have seen certain companies start to take a stand and say that they're going to phase out the use of glyphosate in their supply chain by a certain year. So it's a place where EWG will continue to work, and really thank you for your interest in the topic.
Oh, absolutely. And you're welcome back anytime you want a forum to reach out to the American people. So thank you so much, Dr. Alexis Temkin. Their website at the EWG is simply EWG.org. Thank you again, Dr. Temkin. Everyone, stay tuned. We've got Dewan Bennett coming up. If you're angry, you might want to listen in. You're listening to One Life Radio.
When out the corner of my eye, I saw a pretty little thing approaching me. She said, I never seen a man who looks so all alone. Could you use a little company? If you pay the right price, your evening will be nice, and you can go and send me on my way.
you do this to yourself? She looked at me and this is what she said. Oh, there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. I got bills to pay, I got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know I can't slow down, I can't hold back. Though you know I wish I could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.
Oh my gosh, Ronaldo, you're doing a great job on the music today. And I got my new sound system so I can really hear well. It's so nice, everyone. Welcome back to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. We've got one of my favorite guys on the line, Dewan Bennett. He is a licensed professional counselor with 2 master's degrees and over 12 years of counseling experience. He currently has his own practice here in Dallas, Texas, Dewan Bennett Counseling, and he believes, as do I, that the key to mental and behavioral success is the ability to master self-awareness and emotional control. You can find Dewan on Instagram at dewan.bennett_counseling or his website, dbennettcounseling.com. Always a pleasure. How are you doing today, Dewan?
I'm all right, Bern. How have you been? It's good to hear your voice.
It is good to hear your voice, too. Thank you. And I always get in a good mood when you're on the show because you make it so easy for me. We have such a good, friendly rapport, and we always talk about subjects that matter, I feel, which today is how effectively to deal with anger. So many people are angry right now. My goodness, you know, when I'm out there driving, I think, holy smokes, people are really just awful. They're just being awful, you know, and I don't know what's going on in the world right now. I guess it's part of the COVID-19 fallout, but there's really a lot of things going on in the world today that are making people angry. So is anger really ever, is it really ever justified, though? Isn't it a natural emotion that we kind of have to get out?
Sure. So you spoke to it. I think that, you know, anger is one of the basic human emotions. It's just as natural as happiness, sadness, anxiety, or disgust. I think a lot of these emotions are tied to our survival. So there are definitely going to be situations in which you feel like your anger is justified. Let's say, for instance, if there's a situation where you witness something racist happen to someone you love, someone you care for, or you dealt with the sexism issue at work, or you witnessed or was a victim of bullying, or structural economic inequalities. I think there definitely are situations that cause people to be angry. And a lot of times it's through a sense of justifiable anger, or what we call a moral outrage, that uses people to feel like, hey, this situation is wrong and I'm going to do something about it.
Well, now there's lots of the political anger. Oh, my gosh. For people that don't agree on certain matters, it's gotten out of hand. The whole mask thing has gotten out of hand. I mean, people are so angry walking around, and I just don't know what the solution is.
I think a lot of times when you have a situation, when you're dealing with anger, you first need to figure out what type of anger you have. I think for a lot of people, they put anger in this one box, right? This kind of explosive, aggressive type of anger. Well, there are several different type of angers that people need to be aware of. We just spoke about one type of anger, which is justifiable anger. And I think, again, we see a lot of that right now with the political structure and what's going on with the social justice movement, as well as parents, you know, upset or bothered or worried about their kids going back to school. But then you have another type of anger. You have annoyance anger, right? For this is what you see with most people. They're just typically annoyed. Somebody's cut them off when they're driving. Someone has said something to them that they disagree. Their kids aren't listening to them, or they're dealing with a boss who's like a jerk. I think that that's another type of anger. And then we may have aggressive anger. That's the anger that we see that involves in some type of intimidation, manipulation, dominance, or control of other people. I think that's the anger that we have walking around, where you see people end up, you know, punching someone or punching something.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have people who engage in what we may call like passive anger, right? So this tends to be a little more indirect. It can be subtle insults. It can be picking up someone late simply because you're trying to teach them a lesson. Like you're supposed to go out with friends and you're just angry with them, so you just pick them up a little later. It can be within your marriage withholding sex, right? It's more of a passive aggressive way to express how you feel to someone. You know, your children are mad, so you don't take them to Chuck E. Cheese. You don't tell them that you're mad. You just don't take them to Chuck E. Cheese. So there's that type of anger. And you may have people who just throw temper tantrums, right? Or what we call kind of these intermittent explosions. And I think you see that a lot of times where there's this kind of reverting back to your childhood when your needs wasn't met. It's kind of a very selfish anger, right? You didn't get what you wanted. Someone didn't do something you like, so then you just get in the grocery store, you get in the toy aisle at Walmart or the jewelry aisle for adults, and you just throw a fit because you didn't get what you want. So I think we see anger in various type of ways.
Yeah, well, an intermittent explosive disorder, isn't that kind of like borderline personality disorder as well? Aren't they similar in some ways? And isn't everyone kind of experiences anger at some point? I mean, like you said, there's different kinds. You know, there's justifiable anger. There's annoyance anger. I think that's what I get when I drive is annoyance anger. Anger. But how do you know when anger is actually a disorder?
I think when you know it's a disorder is when you're talking or you're dealing with more like chronic anger. So you find yourself being angry, you know, for long periods of a time. Most people deal, as you stated, with anger. So there's going to be different types of things that frustrate you. But when you find that you've been frustrated and angry for long periods of time, we're talking about 2 months plus, I think that's when we're talking about it. You mentioned borderline personality disorder. Intermittent explosive disorders can be a symptom of BPD where you see someone who maybe a couple of times a year, 4 or 5 times a year, they just have these big emotional outbursts that typically lead to some type of loss, whether it's loss of a relationship. Usually there's some type of financial loss associated with it because they explode at work. They cuss someone out at work. They cuss out a cop, so now they get a higher ticket, things of that nature. So I think when you see that your anger is not subsiding, that you now need to kind of have a better understanding of what's going on with you and to make sure that it doesn't turn into something more serious, such as borderline personality disorder.
Yeah, and most of it starts in childhood. It's a byproduct of a disturbed childhood.
It can be. It can be a byproduct of a disturbed childhood. It can be a byproduct of your needs not getting met in your childhood. It can be a byproduct of you witnessing certain temperamental behaviors from your parents. Example, when we talk about anger, so let's think about this. You have a lot of children who are now, they're very passive aggressive. So bullying is not what it used to be. It's not, you know, walk up to you, stick my hands in your pockets and take your lunch money. Nowadays, you see you're more passive aggressive or what we call this more covert type of bullying where kids are making rumors about you or they're posting stuff on social media or they're making memes about you doing something sexually inappropriate where a lot of those behaviors have been learned from children. From their parents. They learned their parents engage in passive behaviors with the other parent, and they started to say, okay, well, this is a way that I can essentially act out my frustration on someone, but then act as if that's not my intent. My intent was not to hurt you or to harm your feelings because it's not really aggressive. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come off as aggressive. It comes off as passive aggressive to where I can always back out of it if I don't get the results that I desire.
Well, passive aggressive is the worst, too, because if you're like me, yes, of course, I get angry. Everyone gets angry. But when someone's passive aggressive with me, I don't know how to handle it because I'm a New York girl. I'm very straightforward. I'm Italian, you know, and I say it like it is. And I'm not passive aggressive at all. At least I want to believe that I'm not. And I just don't even know how to deal with it when somebody's like that. If someone was to hit me, I could hit them back in defense, you know, but when someone verbally attacks you, you know, really think about that, because I think it's so cowardly. It's just very cowardly because, like I said, somebody, goes to punch me, I'm going to put my arm up. And if I have to, I'll punch him back to stop him. I haven't really ever had to do that in my life. But verbally, I'm not going to beat you up. I don't have it in my heart. I could have like a best friend and know very intimate details about them. And if they passively aggressively attacked me, I won't retaliate and hurt them. I just don't have it. I believe in the golden rule to treat other people the way they treat you. But some people, they cross lines and they hurt you with personal information. And I don't know how you deal with that. How do you best deal with somebody like that, that's being passive aggressive, that you don't quite know what to do about it?
I think, first of all, before you take any other step, you should address that person and let them know how their actions make you feel. Too often we have people who are, that's just their personality. They're passive aggressive. They're manipulative. They kind of go behind your back and they do stuff. And to be honest with you, Burns, some people, they, because they've never been called out on it, or they worked in an environment where that was pretty normal, For them, that's just a normal way that they interact with each other or other people. So sometimes you have to really point out to people, you know, how you feel about their actions. And I think if that doesn't work, if you're dealing with the person and they're being very passive aggressive to you, and you seem like they're trying to manipulate you, or, you know, you have a coworker who is writing letters to your boss and writing emails behind your back and then acting as if, you know, they didn't do it, I think you have to separate yourself from that person, because obviously that buildup of anger and frustration with this person, right? Because there is the frustration emotion that happens, or anger. I think that can lead to more so exploding, or what we may see as rage, because now you're acting out against that person because you feel like, hey, you felt trapped. You felt trapped when you try to talk to them and they act like nothing happened. You felt trapped when you tried to explain something to them and they can't remember, or they're denying it. And now your only sense of recourse, again, our body starts to pump ourselves with adrenaline and cortisol, which is going to stimulate our amygdala, fight, flight, freeze. So now most people are going to then fight as a response because they feel trapped and they feel like they need to protect themselves.
Interesting stuff. More coming up. I love having you on the air, Dewan. It's so nice to be with you today. Everyone, stay tuned. More coming up with Dewan Bennett. We're talking about how to effectively deal with anger. You're listening to One Life Radio.
Else doing just cause everybody doing what they all do. If one thing I know, I fall but I grow. I'm walking down this road of mine, this road that I go home. So am I wrong for thinking that we could be something for real? Now am I wrong for trying to reach the things that I can't see? But that's just how
enjoying this clear sound in my headset. I hope that you are getting it over the airways as well. Everyone, welcome back to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, and Dewan Bennett is with us. He is a licensed professional counselor with 2 master's degrees and over 12 years of counseling experience. He currently has his own practice, Dewan Bennett Counseling, in Dallas, Texas. He believes that the key to mental and behavioral success is the ability to master self-awareness and emotional control. You can find Dewan on Instagram at dewan.bennett_counseling or his website, dbennettcounseling.com. Always a pleasure. We're continuing our talk about how to effectively deal with anger. So, you know, let me ask you this. Is it good for people to get it out, if you will, somehow when they're feeling angry? Or is that non-productive?
I think it's definitely good to get it out. But just because you get it out doesn't mean it dissipates, right? I think that you have to be mindful, again, of what you're feeling, what's going on with you, and then find healthy coping skills or means to deal with it. A lot of times what happens is someone says, okay, let's sit down, let's talk about this problem. And since I talked about it, now I'm not going to be angry about it. But then you find yourself still ruminating about it or worried, or you still find yourself getting a little anxious when you're around that person. Then that means the issue is not resolved. At that point in time, you know, developing healthy emotional regulation skills are extremely important. I think we always have to be aware of our EQ and how we regulate and manage our own feelings, because sometimes we don't have a resolution to our anger. Anger is a normal part of grief, right? It's a normal stage that you may feel when someone passes. So what do you do about that anger? You can't really get answers. That person's no longer here. In some cases, you may not know why they passed, but having an understanding of how to deal with your anger and how it may manifest within your life, I think that's important.
Yeah. And a lot of loss, different types of loss. You get angry, you get hurt. You know, I always like to, you know, when I'm upset about something, I typically, my brain, I've trained it to go to the four agreements, because I feel like so many times we assume things or we take things personal when we shouldn't, and we get angry about it, you know, and we get angry at ourselves for not being impeccable with our word or doing our best, things that can invoke anger. And that's, well, that's what works for me. But what should someone do if they're feeling angry all the time, or if they notice little things make them angry that didn't bother them in the past?
I think one of the things you want to do if you feel angry all the time, I think probably the first step in that is, you know, I think joining some type of support group is going to be important, because if you're constantly feeling on the edge, then it's only a matter of time before you explode. So trying to figure out how to get in a space where you can talk about that anger and you don't feel judged in your learning skills to help you with that anger, I think it's important. But there's also some things that you can do outside of that. I think, you know, thinking before you speak is very important when managing your anger. Learning how to self-regulate, like, you know, calming techniques, things like that, meditation, get some exercise. I think people who go out and get exercise, again, we're talking about the endorphins. I think those people a lot of times feel a lot more relaxed. Sometimes we just got to take a time out and take a break. I think if you have the ability to remove yourself from situations, a lot of times it kind of brings your blood pressure down and you're able to relax more. That's going to definitely be healthy. Identify possible solutions to your anger.
Mm-hmm.
Find humor. Sitting down, watching a show like Fresh Prince or Martin Lawrence or Friends or whatever is the comic relief that you may have within your community that's part of your upbringing that maybe takes you to a happier place in your life, hopefully. I think things like that typically can help people deal with those type of situations, but I also feel like you just have to find yourself and surround yourself with things that are happy and calming and relaxing.
Yeah, and it can do a lot of damage to your brain. I'm reading here, a prolonged release of the stress hormones that accompany anger can destroy neurons in the areas of the brain associated with judgment and short-term memory, and it weakens the immune system.
Weakens your immune system. You can have cardiovascular issues. I mean, so much can happen when your body is constantly hijacked, sending your body a lot of cortisol and endorphins and things of that nature, are not endorphins, adrenaline. So you have to be mindful of like what you're doing with your anger, because if you find yourself, we've all seen it. A person driving, they get cut off, and you just see that person turn red, and they're ready to jump out of the car, they grab the crowbar, and it's like, wow, was that little incident the thing that led to you being so angry?
Mm-hmm.
Probably not. There were probably a lot of other circumstances that led to that issue. But I think being mindful of those things and being mindful of the physical effects that's going on with you if you're not dealing with your anger and your frustrations.
Mm. Well, is there a difference between anger and rage? When do you know where your anger has flipped a switch where it's dangerous?
I think when you're talking about anger and rage, anger is a feeling or emotion that, you know, when somebody's been offended or they've been wronged, things of that nature. So, again, we talked about ways in which anger can be healthy. Rage more so is an action. It's retaliation. It's a response to the feeling of anger. And a lot of times rage is unhealthy, because what people do when they're in rage, they do things that are destructive. They may say things that are very destructive. So I think that that's where you see the difference between anger and rage. Anger, it's more so the emotion that you feel in response to something. Rage is the behavior that you engage in as a response to whatever bothered you or made you angry.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when somebody says something in rage, though, should you pay attention? I mean, should you forget it? It depends upon, I guess, what's said. But if somebody says something that really, I'm trying to think of what I want to say here, that causes you to have caution, that perhaps that person could be dangerous. I mean, how serious do you take rage and the things that people say when they're angry?
I think one thing that's always important is always to pay attention to what someone says. Now, the reality is, in a moment where they're angry or rageful, the way in which they said it may not actually be the way they feel. Okay, an example, I may have a friend, and why I'm extremely angry at him and enraged, I may call him a lazy fat ape. Right, so I may, I, I, may say that, right? Because now I'm angry and I'm rageful and, you know, I just need to explode. But the reality is I may feel like he could be a little healthier and I may feel like he could be a little more productive. I don't want him to believe that I am judging him in that way, but I do want him to believe that I am concerned about his health as well as his lack of productivity. So I think there are ways in which what I'm saying means something, but just because the way at the time I probably didn't use my proper judgment or tact and say it in a way that can be very beneficial that you can actually hear.
Yeah.
You can receive it.
Well, I think you should always be impeccable with your word, or at least try to, because I will say this. My mom, and I'm half Italian and Irish, by the way. When I said that earlier, I thought I heard my mom come down from the spirit world and say, hey, you're half Irish, too. But but you know, so many people are not impeccable with their words, and words have power. And I will say this because my mom used to say this. Be careful what you say, because some things can never, and I mean never, be taken back. They cannot be forgotten. They leave scars. Words leave scars. And so you must be impeccable with your word. And so I'll lead with this. There's where my next question is going. So why do people get so angry about politics? Like, what the heck is up with that?
Well, there's two things. Before I comment on that, I wanted to say that, yes, you know, you mentioned the four agreements and you mentioned being impeccable with your words and don't take anything personally and don't make assumptions and always do your best. I think that's important. And I think that's important in controlling your own anger. I think when it comes to something such as politics, there's aspects of politics that, I mean, the way that it's marketed is to induce anger. There's a lot of clickbait that goes along with politics. But I also think that for us, for, you know, your typical American, politics is something that we don't have much control of. We have a voice. We can make a comment on Twitter, or we can write a letter to our senator or our mayor. But other than that, we don't really have a voice. We don't feel like what we want to happen is actually happening. I mean, a lot of studies show that 90% or you may have policies that went through the legislator within your community or on a federal level, but 90% of the community didn't agree with it. So it's kind of like you feel hopeless. You feel helpless. You feel like a lack of control. Mm-hmm. I think that's what a lot of issue with COVID and the mask wearing. You have so many people who feel like they're being forced to do something. That's the real only issue that they have with it, is that they feel like they're forced. Now, if you told them that they could never wear a mask, that same group of people who are angry about having to wear a mask will put masks on, because you're not going to tell me what to do. There's always going to be people who kind of buck the system or feel as if, hey, when they're forced to do something, they're not going to do it. And I think that's where a lot of the anger comes with politics. We see so many people benefiting from the hurt that we have in this country. And I think that's why you have a lot of people in this constant hijack anger in regards to things politically.
Well, yeah, it's great having you with us. I hear the music, which means I've got to kick the field goal. kick the ball. I miss being in studio with you. I cannot wait to see you again. DeJuan Bennett, thank you so much. Always a pleasure, everyone out there listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did, for sure. You know, everybody, just be nice, okay? Be nice, because you get one body, you get one mind, and you get one life.